Welcome to Utopian AF, the podcast, where we examine a different component of our world, how it exists today, and how it could evolve to benefit everyone. This episode, we will conclude our discussion about domestic pets and how we ensure animals are treated ethically in our utopian society. I'm your host, Patrick.
I'm your host, John.
And welcome once again to Utopian AF, the podcast. So, welcome back, audience. If you're still with us, kudos to you.
I want to thank those of you that commented on last week's episode. Appreciate it. And for those of you that didn't comment on it, well,
we have judged you, and it hurts. It hurts, John.
Cuts deep. Cuts real deep.
What are we talking about this week?
Last week, we were talking about how pets could fit into utopian society. And the conclusion we came to was that overall, the quality of life needs to be taken into consideration for domestic pets, how they are perceived, how they're treated, and how they're bred, and how they can be incorporated into pet family ship. Today, we're going to talk about how could we make that happen. How do we get from A to B, where we're at now, to that utopian culture?
If you're listening to this episode, most likely you heard the first two. But just to reiterate, where we're at today is that from a legal standpoint, everything points to pets as property.
However, there are more and more people that are treating their pets as family members and those to be cared for.
So, how do we get from laws that view animals, specifically domestic animals, as property? How do we get from that point to a society in which domestic pets are treated with respect, or I'll just say ethically?
I think respect actually was a really good word. I think respect hits it on the nose.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
First, we have to learn how to spell respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Okay, I got it.
Now we just need to find out what it means to me. So how do you think we get there?
Let's start with how do we change public perception?
Okay.
Right now, I feel like it's kind of working that way on its own. You know, with this new generation?
I think it's been the past couple generations.
Well, I have a theory about it.
Yeah, let's hear it.
If you've noticed, there's been a decline in people having children.
Okay.
Now, I won't go too much into the conspiracy part of this, but I think with the birth of technology, you could probably correlate that to birth rates. And as technology has kind of encompassed our entire lives, I think you probably see a dip in fertility amongst people. There's a lot of people who maybe can't have kids.
For whatever reason, they're choosing pet life rather than kid life.
Right.
Yeah. I think there are so many reasons as to why that is the case. I think it comes down to everything from our economy to awakenings. I think people are realizing, the economy is going down. It's getting harder to be able to afford having kids, much cheaper to get pets instead.
I can confirm that.
I believe that people are becoming more aware of what is important in life, which is the experience and quality of life. And I think people are also becoming more aware that that is just as true for humans as well as the animals.
Yeah.
Like we said, when animals become part of your family and you're realizing that quality of life is what life is about, you start considering the quality of life for your family, including your pet.
Agreed. I know there are plenty of people out there who go to some extremes. You're a good example.
I will always go to the extremes for my pet.
You just recently built the snake enclosure for Saturn, right?
Yeah. So I almost said Titan boa. It's not a Titan boa. It's a fucking dinosaur snake that
I think I know python. What you're talking about.
Yeah. So Saturn's a ball python, and he has actually a pretty good size enclosure as it is, considering the regulations that, you know, you find on the internet for snakes and such. It says that perfectly happy in there. They like to hide and stuff anyway. But this guy, he does laps around his box. He crawls underneath his light. He is constantly looking for ways to get out of the box. I get the impression that he's aware he's in a box, and I take him outside.
How do you feel about that?
About what? Him being in a box?
About your perception that he perceives that.
I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable, which is what led to the idea of getting a bigger enclosure. And they don't have... like I was saying, I take him outside and stuff. He likes to explore. He goes through the grass. He doesn't try to run the right way or anything like that. He just likes to explore. That's his personality. It's weird and uncommon for snakes, apparently, but that's his personality. The new enclosure gives him a lot. I wanted something that went up. He had space vertically as well and things to climb on, because he likes to do that. He has three levels to go through now. He has the whole bottom floor level, and then there's half of an upper level on the second level there. And then there's like a third upper level where he has a basking light and such. And it's really cool. Look us up on Facebook. You can see the pictures. Everything in there, it does meet his regulations and his temperatures and everything. So the idea is that he has a place that's not a tiny box anymore. To him, it's going to feel quite like a world. And when he wants to be small, he has places to go hide and be small. But he also has a safe enclosure to do more than that.
Not to get off topic here, but I think it's interesting. It kind of makes you wonder, when you're born into a small environment, do you crave the bigger environment, or do you just adapt to what you're raised in?
I know what you're saying. I think it's different for everyone, because it's sort of like, have you seen the movie The Maze Runner?
I don't think I have.
Okay, I'll break it down real quick. Basically, the premise is they're a bunch of boys that they don't know where they came from prior. They wake up in the center of it's like a courtyard of this huge maze.
Okay.
Huge courtyard. They can live there. They can sustain life. They can survive there, and they do. The maze opens like once a day and shuts at nighttime. They could go into the maze. There's dangers in the maze, things like that. So
I might have seen this.
Most of the characters just stay there. They're content with their life. And then the main character comes along and he's like, I need to know how to get out of here. I need more than this and blah, blah, blah. I can't just stay here and farm in the middle of this maze. I want to know who built the maze. I want to know why the maze is here. I want to know why we're in it. I want to get the hell out of this maze. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's just it. It's you get to a point where the box, you know, some people, the box is too small. Some people, the box is just right.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like, loosely, it sounds like The Village. You've seen that movie, right? Yeah.
You could really compare that to anything. It's The Matrix, you know. Neo somehow knew something was wrong with the world. He knew there was something outside of it. He, even though he didn't know what it was, he knew that it was there.
I feel like we're preaching to the choir, so to speak, because if you're listening to this podcast, you probably understand what we're talking about.
Yeah. You can feel that way in your work life. You can feel totally trapped in a job or in your life, that you absolutely know that there's more to life than what you're living or experiencing, but you don't have the means to get out of it. And in those senses, those walls are in your mind.
You're generally your own worst enemy. But in terms of Saturn, though, that's a good example of thinking about how your animal should be treated, you know, in a way that you would want to be treated if you were that animal, right?
Right. Essentially, if you were in the possession of a godlike being, how would you hope that that entity was treating you? Even if you are a pet. I mean, you know what? If the aliens want me to be their pet, but like part of the deal is they want to like give me belly rubs, feed me tasty treats, and take me out on ventures.
Sign me up.
And I ain't got to do a job. All I got to do is be cute. You know, fuck. Yes, daddy.
I was waiting for you to say some stupid shit. I had a feeling you were going to say that specifically, too.
Oh, you know me too well.
I imagine you like all dolled up in the face with like a dress on.
But if they're just going to throw me in a cold fucking box every night where I'm shivering and they're just, you know, I'm in that box all day, every day, and they just throw food in it.
You're coming at them like Rambo, right?
I don't think that's an experience I would want to exist in. I mean, I feel like that at some jobs where I'm like, dude, I feel like I'm just in this box. Lunchtime comes around. Here's your food. Get back to work. Shut the fuck up. But at 5 o'clock, they don't come out of their box. They're still in it.
That's true. I was trying to find Rambo's famous line. They drew first blood, not me. That's what I was trying to look up this whole time.
You had to look that up. It's the name of the movie.
I don't like paraphrasing, so I wanted to make sure I said it verbatim. Anyway.
They made me bleed my own blood. Wait, no, that's not right.
I made them bleed my own blood. No. So, getting back on topic here.
How do we convince people to care about the quality of life of the pets?
The people that don't already or right. that aren't going that route.
This falls back into basically what a lot of our answers fall into is education, which we'll get to. But in the long run, this is something that would ideally be a part of the education process, exploring and learning about sentient life and learning a respect for that life. And I think we could start introducing that into our education system right away.
Just to briefly touch on education to kind of give people a primer of where our heads are at when it comes to education, there's opportunities there for us to expand what we learn or what we teach as a society.
The institution can be reshaped and revamped for a better purpose than to support a capitalist society.
Yeah, that sounds right. It's funny you said education because that was what I was thinking the whole time is like, we're going to say education for a lot of this stuff.
Right. So basically, it's really what are we trying to put into our education? And in this case, a respect for sentient life. I feel like we fucking just answered it. Now we're like, shit, I don't know what else to talk about.
No.
It sounds pretty easy. Stop being a dick.
Yeah. In all seriousness, I think there are some practical things we can do today. I think first and foremost, we need to examine laws that are written where the stance is your pet is a product that you own.
I definitely think that we could reconsider animal rights from outside of the human perspective. The only way you're not being a dick is from your own perspective, which is the human perspective being, well, they're not human, so they don't deserve human respect. But you could only come to that conclusion from the perspective of being a human that sees it that way. Another way I can describe this is if a Christian was trying to get you to understand their point based on the logic because it's in the Bible. But the reason why that's like doesn't hold up to a person that's not Christian because it doesn't matter what's in the Bible to someone who's not Christian. You can't say like homosexuality is wrong and then an atheist goes, why is it wrong? And the Christian goes, because it says so in the Bible. That doesn't hold weight to an atheist. An atheist's morality is not held by the rules of the Bible.
Right.
Which, by the way, homosexuality wasn't introduced into the Bible until 1946. It's either 46 or 48. Look it up.
Homosexuality, just in general, wasn't really seen as taboo until the last 100 years.
Right. I believe the Bible originally in its stead was pedophilia was wrong. They changed it to homosexuality. Let's get back to the animals.
So what are you saying? Are you saying we can't educate people who have no value in education?
No. The point I was trying to make earlier was the way that you get to a point where you can realize, I'm trying to draw a path to enlightenment, essentially, if that makes sense. Realizing on a core level to where you now know that you're really no different than the animal, except for the fact that you're just more evolved. The point is, the problem people have seeing that is they're not seeing things from outside of the human perspective.
So, okay, I gotcha.
If you're going to introduce these concepts into education, then what you're trying to unlock in the mind of the students is that the rules aren't defined by what's human, what's not. If you really got down to it, I would say all of our laws should be not just based on the human perspective, because we have to be self-aware even as a race.
Do you have an example of that?
An example of that would be like the Ten Commandments, where it's like laws of God, essentially. They exist from without humanity. So that way when humanity argues it for their own wants, it's like, hey, that's, you know, that's the law of God. Why can't I have sex with my best friend's wife? That makes my life a lot more exciting. But like, yeah, well, you have to think outside of your life. And that's where the laws of God come in, right?
Yeah, I mean, but there's problems with your argument, though.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. This is probably a bad example. It was just the first one that came to my head. The point is, when you look at the law, you look at the law from a certain perspective. And that perspective is outside of just your own want. Now, you could say the reasons why people support Trump or are right wing is because their sole interests are their own. The left wing is more concerned with like what's best for everyone.
I mean, theoretically, but that's not true. We'll get into that in later episodes because we're trying to keep this one fun, damn it.
Let's have some fun.
Basically, what you're saying is stop being a selfish dick and think about other things outside of just being human.
Well, right. But what we were talking about is incorporating that into the education, like just trying to unlock an understanding.
Right.
I think that's the problem that we have with education now is everything is just about learn this, don't question it, just learn it. But I think the key to actual education would be leading understanding. We know what life is. Whether we want to admit it or not, we know that animals are essentially the same as us. We have the science. We know this as a species. We do know. The evidence is all there.
Like,
it's just a choice of whether or not you want to believe it.
What do you mean, like, the evidence is all there? Like, what are you...
There's people that believe the world's still, like, flat, right?
Right.
Now, despite the evidence being there, they kind of just want to deliberately believe in something else.
Yeah, okay.
So, what I'm saying is, people who don't want to perceive that animals... quote unquote, have a soul, that they are a consciousness, that they...
people who don't want to won't.
Right. The people that don't, for whatever reason, it might make them feel guilty for the way they treat their animals. It might make them feel guilty for eating animals, whatever the case is. There's something that prevents them from taking the extra step to understand.
One thing I always think is if people would just be held accountable and responsible, solve so many problems. I think that's kind of what you're essentially getting at.
Right. The way that our culture kind of is now is we're sort of just like, I don't know, if it turns out to be wrong, we'll punish later. We're not really thinking ahead.
Right. Not being proactive.
Right. We're not thinking, what is actually causing this? And how could we actually resolve it? If they don't understand why it's there, you're not going to get it.
It's kind of like jail statistics, right? When you go to jail, there is a high, like an unfairly high percentage that
you're going to wind up back.
You're going to wind back up in jail.
Yeah.
We're more interested in a society that punishes than seeks to do root cause analysis and course correct.
Exactly.
Rehabilitation is the word I was looking for.
Rehabilitation and actual prevention.
Right. Right. Not to get on the crime way, you know, the crime
right.
topic, but I'll say briefly, a lot of the people that are in jail today who have maybe committed murders and whatnot, you know, heinous crimes by our vanilla kind of kosher life here in comparison. A lot of those people grew up in areas that were underfunded by taxpayer dollars, didn't have good right. education.
I think about humans from the puppy mill.
Exactly. I mean, that's how you equate the two, right? That's how I kind of see it. I know that's kind of how you see it.
And it's the question of, do we punish them or do we fix the problem that created them?
Right. And at the same time, we have to help them still.
You have to understand, as hard as it can be because of emotional response, most of the time, I mean, I don't think people are just evil intent. I think most of the time people don't know. People are figuring it out. We're all just like computers that were slapped with the curse of emotion.
But we all think that we all have our shit together.
Yeah. It's like our brain is always like, oh, I figured things out. Okay, I know how it is now. And then like it takes making another major mistake, being like, fuck, I thought I knew what I had. I
wrong.
I might have been wrong.
And if you just say, like the first time, if you just say, I might have been, you're going to come to a third time where you're like, I was
wrong. Certainly wrong. And our society can be very unforgiving depending on your classification. If you're in the high class, you get a speeding ticket, no big deal. Yeah, you're in the low class, you get a speeding ticket.
Oh, guess what? You have a misdemeanor charge.
That can domino effect into some major problems that throws your life off course for years. And that's the truth.
Getting back to pets, it's a multifaceted problem, right? Education is one, you know. There's so many different aspects of society that we're going to have to address in this podcast. But when it comes to animals, I think there are things that we can do that get us from point A to point B, right? The idea of ethical breeding, for example, shutting down the puppy mill concept, radically changing our education system so that we can start developing a focus on respect for life, right? Yeah. I also wonder, though, if we go down this, and this question may like just blow up our podcast, meaning we're just done, but don't worry, we got other ideas for other podcasts. We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back to run those into the ground shortly.
Here's my question for you. What happens if we actually achieve a utopian society where we all love one another and we all respect one another? And then, the aliens show up, and these aren't like nice gray aliens. They're like Independence Day aliens.
Right.
We've now been made soft by ourselves.
The thing is, we don't have to necessarily be soft. Think.
Okay, but hold on. You say that, okay. But in a utopian society that's been established for years, right? Like Everyone's coexisting, it's running, we're thriving. So you can't tell me that you're going to see aliens and be like, fucking kill that guy. That's not how you're going to react, right?
Well, right. I would hope that if you created successfully a utopian society, your first reaction to seeing any living creature would be to have respect for the creature first, which is like what we were talking about before with animals. Like, I don't know if you're on my side or not. Not to assume the worst and act on it. But I think it's also important to be prepared for the worst. If an alien showed up, in my opinion, if you're asking shots fired first, no, I don't think we should do that. Because for one, we're probably going to get wiped anyway. Our best bet is if they're in peace, but we're going to have to hope that they're in peace and wait until they prove otherwise. We might come across something that trumps us and that is not benevolent. We will figure out a way to be ready for that. I think it's still important to have some kind of military force or some kind of defense system in place.
We'll all learn karate.
I mean, actually, yeah, I think physicality should be part of the education process. I think learning to use our bodies and learning about our bodies is hand in hand crucial. We should be learning how to strengthen our bodies and our minds in school rather than just being told about it.
Ultimately, I think that is where the world will eventually go, even without our podcast. I think that we're going to reach a point as a society where too many of us have been eating whole sleeves of Oreo cookies, and somebody's going to be like, you know what? This may have gone too far.
Historically speaking, humans wait until the problem is at their doorstep, banging on it, before they finally decide to do something about it.
Yeah. I just watched Don't Look Up, too.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It's weird, that movie, man, the reaction that it had, it's just very divided, and it's funny.
What, like, you either love or hate it?
Right. And the thing is, if you love it, the movie is a comedy and a tragedy at the same time.
Tragedy in the sense that that's how it'll probably go down.
It's like you're laughing because it's true, but you're crying because it's true.
Yeah, that checks
out. And if the movie offends you, like,
why would people be offended by it?
The only reason you could be offended is because it's like, you know, it's true, but you're like, shut the fuck up. That's the only reason I can think of to be offended by it. It's like, I don't understand how people get offended by woke culture. And I've been really trying to understand.
I don't know that it's the concepts that people have a problem with. I think it's the idea of woke culture. And I'm a pretty liberal guy. What I would say is that sometimes it feels like that, I don't want to say agenda, woke movement, I'll call it that, pushes on things that don't seem all that significant.
Give me an example.
Anytime you talk about remaking a movie from 1940s.
Okay.
Like, I understand what the problem is. I get that what is being portrayed there as a classic movie would not fly by how we view ourselves today.
Yeah, it was designed for a different audience in a different time.
I'm fully on board with your message for today's society and all of that. And I understand that playing this movie today for your children or whatever may be problematic.
They won't have much of an interest in it. It's hard for them to relate to.
But even more so, that getting upset about that seems a little absurd to me.
You're talking about people who get upset about remakes?
No, I'm talking about people who got upset that the movie existed because it violates society's norms today.
Yeah, I got you. And in that case, you have two options. You can either decide, I want this to be an extreme left dictatorship, which means that nothing can exist unless it is politically correct in every way. And in that case, you're going to lose out on a lot of history that's there, because our history isn't made up of perfection. It's made up of a bunch of idiots learning from their mistakes, or sometimes not learning from their mistakes, so that someone later can learn from those mistakes over time. And it's basically a choice of being able to distinguish the beauties of our flaws and then being offended by them. I think the line may be able to exist in a way where if it's something that we have gotten over as a collective, then maybe it could be something that gets looked at as historical. Do we believe it's right that slaves existed? No. If we make a movie that takes place during a certain time period in a certain location where slavery existed, would it be right to include that into our story? Is it historically accurate? Yes. But is it politically correct? Well, no. So what do we do? Do we create a fictionalized version of this, of the history, which is what we usually do anyway? I mean, technically, everything is kind of a fictionalized version of history. Or are we trying to make a film that really tells how it was? And sometimes there's jokes in movies that it's funny at the time because of stigmas that exist at the time, or the way things are performed or perceived at the time by the general masses or whatever. And in that case, it's hard to say. I mean, it's another thing that could be solved by education.
Yeah.
The understanding that this movie was made in a certain time and there were certain ways people perceive things in that time, and therefore the movie's content is of that time.
Right.
If people were able to distinguish that, you wouldn't necessarily have to ban things.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like the key is just understanding, instead of what laws do we have to prevent this? What laws do we have to prevent that? We wouldn't have to focus so much on laws if we were able to come to mass understanding.
It's kind of like when you see crazy warning labels like, please don't eat the Tide Pods. It's because somebody has eaten the Tide Pods and they have to be told.
The natural response to that is, well, that person's just an idiot. But again, now you're just channeling your anger and frustration to someone that had to learn the hard way. And the thing is, we all at some point have to learn the hard way.
We should be allowed to fail and start seeing failure as a learning opportunity, and not necessarily the end of times.
Right. I think the key to the success for animals and pet life is understanding. And I think these are all examples of how you can open your perspective to reach understanding rather than judgment.
That's not something that we're going to be able to solve for quickly. That's going to be a generational thing. And it's already kind of started.
It takes time. It's a path of understanding.
The other thing that we had brought up in the last episode is breeding. So right now, people can breed. There's really no regulation about breeding.
The regulations are in favor of capitalism rather than quality of life, which most things are right now.
And there are certain people who try to maximize their profit by maximizing the litters that they have of their dogs or cats or whatever the case may be. And there's really no oversight other than maybe an occasional call to animal welfare or something like that.
Yeah. What these puppy mills consider as product waste is euthanasia on animals. Whatever doesn't sell and gets too big, they just put them down.
That's true. But even the ones that they sell, like, it still causes problems with the ones they sell.
Oh, yeah. The problems exceed that example, but even so, it's a point to be made where it's like, imagine if humans were produced that way. We're gonna make a bunch of them.
They kind of are,
and I guess you're kind of I guess they kind of are. The ones that wind up in orphanages and don't get adopted. I mean, we don't euthanize them, but we do just throw them on the streets to fend for themselves. Literally, right this second, there are people on the street that just didn't have a choice.
Right.
They didn't choose to be alive. They didn't choose to be given up for adoption. They didn't choose to not be adopted. They didn't choose any of that shit.
If we were to try and transform the education system that we have today so that the quality of life, the respect for life, these things were all being taught, right? Do you think that the breeding issue, it may not ever be fully eliminated, but do you think if we started with education, that intrinsically the people who grow up to maybe one day would be breeders won't?
Yeah.
Because they are now making a decision to be ethical about it.
Yeah, exactly what you said. Once you get to a point where the generation is being born into and educated into more enlightened way of perceiving things, then naturally those people are going to be picking apart every aspect of society, looking for a way to improve it.
I hope when that happens, there's like two guys like us doing something similar to a podcast that they're like, we've got all new problems now.
Right.
I hope they're
new. More utopia, more problems.
I honestly hope we're not having the same problem with pets and animals 50, 100, 200 years.
It really depends on which direction humans want to go to. It's either in the me and mine direction or it's in the more enlightened evolution direction.
As far as how we get there, when it comes to the breeding thing, the overall treatment and respect of animals, I think there's a gradual process and a social movement, if you will, to start valuing that life differently. But I think on top of that, we also talk about better standards for breeding, more oversight for breeders. But again, I think education is at the crux of this problem.
Yeah, you have to actually understand why regulations are in place. I don't think most people do. That's just the law. That's just the regulation. We're never taught. You know, did anybody really ever explain car insurance to you when you were young? Why you need it? Why it's there? The basic idea is, you know, in case you run into somebody, the insurance company is going to pay for the problems.
I mean, that's what they tell you.
But like, who tells you that?
I'm going to go with radio. I feel like radio has told me that. Maybe TV.
Advertisements.
Yeah.
Which are there to sell you on the product. So basically our education is coming from advertisements and a school system that is training you to become a worker bee while the advertisements are training you to become a consumer.
A consumer bee. Though.
Consumer bee.
Yeah. You got worker bee and consumer bee. It's one bee. Trick question. We know that there are steps in education reform that we can do to get from point A to point B. We don't have those yet, but right. As we continue to evolve in this podcast, we'll probably come back to some of these topics.
Definitely come back, because we're also going to talk about livestock at some point.
In summary, we need to focus on our education system, getting that from point A to point B, and incorporating this concept of valuing life equally. In addition, we think we should probably have some kind of stricter breeder guidelines so that not just anyone can breed a dog, and better pet. We didn't even talk about this, but we've kind of alluded to it before, a better pet adoption process so right. that we're vetting the people who are allowed to coexist with animals, right. if you will.
This concludes our topic on domestic animals, but I want to know what you guys think.
Let us know what you think.
Hit us up on Facebook, message or comment section. We really want the feedback. We want to know what you think. Do you think that pets have a place in utopia? Should we just do away with pet ownership, or should we increase our regulations and take into consideration the quality of life for our furry little friends?
Or any other recommendations you may have, especially about this podcast, because we also need that. We need some feedback. Give us your feedback.
What are we talking about next? What's going to be next?
Death penalty.
Death penalty. Does the death penalty have a place in utopia?
Because girls like puppies and murder.
Yeah, they do.
Tune into that episode next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in to Utopian AF, the podcast.